From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
As a garden writer, I get a lot of questions every year basically asking this: what's wrong with my fill-in-the-blank plant? An accurate diagnosis is the critical first step before taking any corrective action, but how do gardeners get one, and then where do they get guidance on what to do next? The creators of the online Purdue Plant Doctor that does just that, plus offers possible solutions, are here today, so more in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top-quality spring-blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
Programming and underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, now offering 100% organic vegetable, flower, and herb seeds for that farm and garden. Available at highmowingseeds.com.
Two Purdue professors, entomologists Cliff Sadoff and plant pathologist Jana Beckerman, collaborated on the recent enhancements to the Purdue Plant Doctor online tool at purdueplantdoctor.com, and they're here today to tell us how to sharpen our diagnostic skills and to learn how to do the homework it takes to plot a course of action when trouble strikes. So welcome to both of you. Thanks for making time today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Yes. So now, I'll just say, even though the Plant Doctor database of plants and plant troubles is geared to the East and Midwest, the same sort of logical, methodical process that we're going to talk about, that you're going to help us with today, of how to get an answer, applies to gardeners in any region, yes?
Absolutely. You know, it's the same process. You know, Jen and I taught a class together for many years, and we found that this was the process to help people come up with a diagnosis, whether when they had it determined whether it was an insect or a disease or if it was some sort of environmental problem that was causing it.
Yeah. So first we need to know what the plant is, right?
Oh, yeah.
So how do we do that, you guys? How do you recommend? Because I get a lot of questions and they're like, oh, my pine tree is sick. And then I look at the picture and it's, you know, a different conifer.
We have a joke that when people ask us and tell us that they have a pine tree, we ask them if it has 5 needles, 2 to 3 needles, or 1 needle. Of course, you know, the horticulturists among us know that the 1 needle pines, quote unquote, are spruce or fir.
Yes. So, and we're not making, I mean, not trying to disparage. It's just,
it requires
some homework. And even for those of us, I'm sort of an intermediate level person, not as expert as you two, but, you know, I have to look closely and I have to think. So let's talk about are there some apps or whatever that we can get an ID, first of all, of what we're looking at?
So, you know, one of the things that, you know, since we both were faced with the same problem teaching undergraduates who don't know their plants. Especially during COVID, we figured out that some of these online apps are pretty good at getting you in the ballpark. So, you know, there's something called iNaturalist, which was done in part, you know, with the National Geographic Society and some other places. That tends to be pretty good. You can upload a picture and it can tell you what it is. Google Lens does also a halfway decent job. The problem is that sometimes it's wrong.
Of course.
But most of the times it's right. 9 out of 10 times it gets you right. Okay. So that's an A.
So number one, we get an ID. And so then, I don't know, Jana, do you want to explain to us then? So we know it's a juniper, and we come to PurduePlantDoctor.com and we type in juniper, Jana, and then what happens?
Well, I'd like to take a step back because we actually recognized the problems that people had using our apps when they were dedicated cell phone apps, that they didn't know what the plant host was. And so one of the ways they can use the website is to click on what type of plant they have, and that, you know, they can click on flowers for their annuals and perennials. They can click on evergreen, conifers, or woody plants and get the identification that way. And then when they click on that big button there, it opens up and we have pictures of all the different hosts.
Right.
So, and that we vetted. So it isn't, so they can also start at the website by clicking to the right side of the screen and choose some of those.
Okay. So we can look at the sort of photo array of little thumbnails, and we can pop those up, click on those, pop them up, look at the big version and go, oh, that's what it is. It's a juniper. Okay.
Yeah. And I really hope people use those, because I'm a plant pathologist. So prior to putting that page together, all my pictures were of like dead and dying plants. So I had to go out and take lots of pictures of healthy plants, which, you know, that was, as a plant pathologist, they're so boring, but I did it. So, and hopefully really good pictures for you.
So one way or the other, either maybe using an app or using this photo driven, this array of photos, based on these sort of broader categories of plants on the plant, PurduePlantDoctor.com, we're going to get an ID. We're going to figure out what our plant is. And then what do we do next? We need to sort of key out what's wrong. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So
go ahead, Cliff.
Okay, so this is a picture-driven process.
Right.
And Jenna and I learned early on that our students could know the difference between leaves, flowers, stems, and roots. So basically what we do is we have, you click on the plant, and then you'll have a choice to look at images of different plant parts, you know, flowers, branches, leaves, or what have you. And then these images come up, and then you match the image that you're seeing with the plant that's in your hand.
Right. So we're going to follow this sort of photo-driven trail of decision-making deeper from identifying the plant and then the part of the plant, and then, oh, wait, it looks like that kind of spot, or it looks like that kind of damage or whatever. We're going to go deeper, deeper, deeper until we get an idea of what may be wrong with our plant.
Exactly. And okay. I just want to clarify one of the things that Cliff said so it doesn't come across wrong is, you know, when you're looking at an iris, for example, and you're looking at the rhizome, and you know, we think of that as the roots, but it's really a modified stem. So sometimes it's confusing even which part of the plant you're looking at, because there's just so much diversity in the plants. And what Cliff and I kept trying to do is, how can we make this simpler but still effective and get the user to the right answer? And that's our overarching goal.
Right. So like I put in, you know, petunia, and I got choices to look at petunias or calibrachoas, which kind of look like petunias. And then I said, oh, leaf problem, let's say, you know, I didn't have a calibrachoa or a petunia that had a leaf problem, but I clicked on leaves. And then I saw an array of photos of like different ornamental plants with different types of leaf issues, you know, and some were from nutrient deficiencies, and some were from white flies, and some were from powdery mildew. And so it's like, oh, right, okay, click, you know, and I could go deeper. So I love that you also have a clickable sort of icon on the homepage that says beneficials. And that sort of takes me to a grid of images of everyone from ground beetles to millipedes and centipedes and spiders and so on. I think that gardeners are too quick to assign blame to insects or other arthropods when they see someone living or on near or on their plant. And I love that you had the beneficials category. Just tell me quickly about that.
Well, you know, it started out when I first got to Purdue 30 years ago. The head landscaper said that he had this plant that was, the leaves were all curled and they were covered with black and orange insects. And I couldn't quite figure out what he was talking about. So I went over to take a look at them, and it was, they were loaded with ladybug larvae.
Yes.
So this happens an awful lot, you know, and look, and the ladybug larvae had just eaten all the aphids and proceeding to eat each other. You know, so we have the beneficials in there, so just so they don't associate every single insect with necessarily being a problem.
Right.
And Jenna and I both believe very firmly in this, that, you know, what we want gardeners to do is to set the stage for success by using appropriate cultural controls, means good horticultural practices, planting things the right spacing, using resistant varieties when possible, not overwatering, not underwatering, you know, being careful with the fertilization. And then once that, if that fails to keep the plants free from problems, then we suggest pesticides that can be used to correct the situation. But we start off with the least toxic approach.
Right. First. So almost an integrated pest management and IPM type of philosophy then.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. So again, I'm a layperson, but one thing that's really helped me over the years in not jumping to the wrong conclusions is to grasp that not everything is a pest or a disease, and to understand, and one of you alluded to this earlier, there are the biotic and abiotic things, like, you know, road salt damage isn't a disease, right? It might look like, oh, what's wrong? My plant is sick, but that's not exactly the situation. I call the abiotic ones the mechanical failures, you know? And so I think that's another thing. And I noticed that you have those categories where appropriate in the sort of selection. There's things that are not diseases and not pests, right?
Well, we do. And we sometimes call them disorders, abiotic yes. disorders, to distinguish between disease and disorder. And actually, most plant problems, if they aren't directly caused by these abiotic disorders, might have these abiotic disorders as an underlying problem. And so it's really important to make sure you identify where those may be factoring in. So as a plant pathologist, one that pops into my head all the time is if you have a low spot or a soggy site, plants that are oftentimes, you know, flooded are predisposed to root rots like Phytophthora and Pythium. And so you really, the diagnosis is a lot more complicated than just Pythium or Phytophthora as a root rot.
Like, how did we get here, right?
Exactly.
Right, because I don't want the plant 10 feet away or 2 feet away to succumb to, or the one in the bed across the garden, because I have the same conditions and, I'm making everybody vulnerable. So I can learn about prevention at a much earlier stage from my...
Exactly. And yeah. That low spot might be better suited for, you know, let's not put an azalea or a rhododendron there. Let's put maybe a sweet shrub or clethra or itea there, which really likes this, does so much better in a soggier site.
Right. So you must look, I mean, I don't know if you do, but you made this database and this tool online, and you probably see the traffic reports and so forth. And I just wondered, are you seeing, like, what are some of the early season troubles that, you know, people are clicking on or looking for information about? You know, I would think I'm in an area where, as I believe you are, where it snows in the winter usually. And so the snow melts finally. And then I usually hear about, like, everybody saying, oh, Margaret, my boxwoods or my junipers are, you know, discolored. They're brown, they're gold, they're kind of tan, you know, those types of things. Is that the kind of stuff at this time of year that you...
Absolutely. Yeah, we're getting a lot of questions now. I just got an email from so we work closely with the Plant Pest Diagnostic Lab, and they tell us what's going on as well. And this is a lot of problems with boxwoods are happening right now between the boxwood leaf miner and there's just lots of other issues associated with that. It's been, I don't know about where you are, but we've had, it was pretty warm in March, and then
yes.
It got pretty cold.
Yes.
So freeze injury.
You mean plants don't like it when one Saturday it's minus 14 and the next Saturday it's 62? You mean that's a problem?
That's exactly. We had a huge issue here where we dropped over 50 degrees in a single
yep.
day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, generally anyone who had peaches probably lost their peaches and lots of other stone fruit. And also, you know, your flowering cherries and things like that aren't going to perform very well.
Right
now, though, the big one is definitely the freeze / winter injury starting to show up. And as we get farther along, we'll start to see, you know, your normal spring foliar disease problems coming in, like apple scab, the juniper rusts, and some powdery mildews, perhaps.
So speaking of those starting to show up and surface, you know, a lot of different things that can happen to plants if we were just taking a quick look and saying what we saw, we'd say, oh, there's a brown spot on my such and such. Well, that's not really enough, is it? I mean, we really need as gardeners to sort of slow down and observe. And I mean, I have a hand lens, I'm no scientist, but you know, some stuff I wanna look at more closely, because if I wanna reach out for help to my extension service, for instance, I wanna be able to say what I'm seeing a little better than I've got a brown spot. Do you know what I mean? So can you tell us, do you sort of encourage people to look closely?
Yeah, let me go first. So what we have in there is once you get led to a diagnosis, we have a section called lookalikes.
Yes.
So you you can compare those things. And you know, part of what we're trying to do is give you a vocabulary to look at things. You know, I don't know, when I first started looking at insects, and I guess I got a Border and White's Guide to Insects, all the insects looked alike.
Yes.
I didn't know how to look at them. And yeah. This is the same thing that happens with, you know, gardeners and trying to diagnose problems. They just say, well, it's just brown leaves or crinkled leaves or there's missing parts. But as you get more and more familiar with it, you know, and you look at these pictures more closely, you get a better discerning eye. But, you know, as Jana, as a plant pathologist, Jana, you have some really strong feelings about the limitations to picture diagnosis, right?
It is a huge issue, but I want to first, you know, commend Margaret. Getting a hand lens is so important. And I think anyone who's serious about their gardening or their plant health care really has to start at a hand lens. In order to start seeing these things and making, you know, learning all of these differences, and then to tag off of what Cliff says, that it is overwhelming at first, and to recognize that whole beginner mind and just taking the deep breath and reminding yourself that, you know, with practice, you'll get better. And it really is just a matter of practice. And, you know, Cliff has been practicing for over 30 years. I've been practicing for over 25 years. So we've had a lot of practice. And in that process, what I've learned is, as great of a tool as a hand lens is, most of my pathogens, unfortunately, are microscopic, and that might not be sufficient. And
yes.
And that's when the extension service comes in and the plant and pest diagnostic labs in your respective states to help you out.
Yeah, and that's, I was going to bring that up because, for instance, I had this small tree, this Korean maple, Acer pseudosuboldianum, that I had had for many years, and I just loved this tree. It was right at the entrance of the garden. That's a boy, fall color, and much hardier than a lot of the so-called quote Japanese maples.
What a great tree.
Yeah. And so the poor thing, it was, you know, fabulous for years and years and years and years. And then maybe three or four winters ago, the winter ended and not a leaf opened on the tree. It had not looked sickly. There had been nothing. It had gorgeous fall color. It had done all its usual things. And it was just dead. It was just totally dead. And that was one where I turned to the extension service for help and asked, should I look around in the root system? Should I send a sample? What should I do? You know, not that I could revive it, I don't mean, but just because I wanted to know. Do you know what I mean? It stumped me.
It's so important. And were you punning stump there, or?
Was I, I'm sorry?
Punning the word stump.
Oh, Oh, Jana, I do that all the time. I say things like dig in. We got to dig into. I mean, I am awful. I'm sorry.
I love
subconscious.
It.
Subconscious. It's totally subconscious.
I love your plant choice because I tell people over and over to get the Korean maple because it's so much hardier. Plus,
yes.
I really like saying pseudosiboldiana.
Yes. Think. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And now I've completely forgotten where I was going. I'm so sorry.
Well, no, but I said I was, you know, trying to figure out should I have gone to this extension service with something like that, you know, just to get the forensics, not to fix anything.
Well, it's important to know what went wrong so you can make sure that, you know, let's say, for example, that I don't think this is likely that it was something like verticillium. You wouldn't want to come back and plant another maple in that.
And that was what my first guess was when I talked to a nurseryman friend and he said, oh, I wonder. And he said, you know, let's look around and exactly. So I haven't planted another one nearby because that was sort of, you know, warning now, but I could have sent a sample, I suppose, then to the extension. Yes.
For situations like that, when plants die suddenly, those are probably some of the worst to diagnose unless there are obvious symptoms of herbicide injury. And especially with, you know, these unusual plants or the collector plants like
green
maple, because we really don't have the widespread planting like we do with like the Fremontii maples. And so we don't have the data to know all of the different things that can go wrong. So you might, you know, one of the worst feelings I get, and I know Cliff feels the same way, is when our best answer for you is, I don't know.
Right, exactly.
It's an honest
exactly.
answer. It's a horrible answer. But sometimes that's the best any of us can do. We just don't have enough data. And I would rather tell somebody, honestly, I don't know, than give them an answer with a certain degree of certitude that has a greater likelihood of being wrong.
Yeah. So, yeah. So yeah, sorry, Cliff, go ahead.
No, I just say as professionals, you know, we just, you know, we want people to understand that we do not know everything and we're giving it our best shot with the best scientific tools that we have available. And yeah. And not knowing is okay.
Yeah. So I just want, along the way through the season as it progresses, are there sort of other greatest hits of sort of surges in searches and traffic? I mean, I would think roses must be one where a lot of people look for help.
Well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, as more and more people start growing these, the knockout roses were just so insanely popular and
right.
So popular. I'm really sad because I don't see black spot as a sample anymore like we used to. And
that's so funny. A pathologist who misses black spot. Okay.
I do. Well, I miss it for two. I miss it for two reasons. One, it's one of those problems that it's pretty easy to diagnose, and it's also pretty straightforward to manage. So I'm right there. But for me, one of the things that I really miss is when people are growing those roses, and there's a lot to be said for them, but very few of them actually have fragrance.
Right.
And to my mind, a rose without fragrance is just, it's missing something.
Right.
So
right.
For a little bit of effort, you know, growing, you know, a David Austin rose or a Floribunda, you know, a different, the Meadowland or any of the Floribundas or hybrid tea, there's an experience that you just don't get. And I sort of miss it.
Right.
Yeah. So on the insect side, there's two things that come to my mind, and it all has to do with climate change. Okay, so what we're finding is that the weather becomes more chaotic. We have wetter springs and drier summers. Okay,
yes.
So the wetter springs cause this flush of growth that make it great for sucking insects and also for a lot of Janus foliar diseases. And I'm sure some others too. But then when it gets hot and dry, we start getting problems with spider mites. And then we start getting problems with borers and insects that bore in beneath the trunk of trees and the like. So, you know, I see that pattern is something that is recurring. And then, of course, you know, we've got the lovely invasives like spotted lanternfly, which is...
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Another nightmare.
Yes. And it's funny there, you just did one like I did. You said the lovely invasives, and they are lovely. You meant it sarcastically, but that happens to be
beautiful.
A gorgeous animal, but oops, hideous. Right?
Emerald ash borer was another pretty one.
It was beautiful. It is beautiful. Yes. Hideous. Right. Yeah. No, I know. Nature is fascinating. So in the last few minutes, I mean, what other things, I mean, in terms of using this kind of tool and in terms of like slowing down, looking more carefully, first IDing the plant and then figuring out what the troubles are, any other things that you really want to highlight about, you know, sort of being a better gardener that way? Because I think learning these lessons and then preventing, like the example you gave, Jana, that I probably shouldn't plant another maple where I might have had verticillium in the, you know, soil-borne disease like that. And, you know, I think that's super important. So any other things that you want to really stress about or things that people come to you for?
Yeah. So in terms of the, you know, it's hard to do something about too much rain. You know, I mean, within limits, you can improve drainage. But there is, but in terms of drought, you can install an irrigation system to irrigate the plant appropriately. And I say that so, you know, you don't want to be wetting the leaves every week if you
right.
don't have to. You know, you know, the right kind of irrigation system would help prevent a tree from succumbing to borers. And then, you know, there's a whole other area of things, scale insects and the like, that also become problematic with extra with intensive drought as well.
They look for they prey upon stressed out the vulnerable individual
yeah.
plants, right? Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. That's a good point, is that we can the more that we support the plants, the more that we help prevent susceptibility to some of these pests and diseases. Yes.
And so water is something people can use without
yeah.
Sorry,
so
Janet.
I'm sorry. I was going to go back and actually use Margaret's example with her maple and verticillium. You know, one of the first things I would do is, assuming you haven't put anything back in that site, is planting some eggplant there.
Yeah.
Just for a year. Nothing gets verticillium like an eggplant.
That's hilarious.
And so
I had no idea.
So if verticillium is there, your eggplant should, you know, go down fairly quickly. And then you'll at least know what's going on. And maybe you want to try again and put in another Korean maple. But the other thing you can do is, if it does turn out that your eggplant succumbed to verticillium, is in the app on the website, there's a button you can press for host plants attacked. And we'd have a list of all the other plants that are susceptible. And so that way you could use it to avoid making a mistake and putting something in that would also end up getting verticillium wilt, like say a redbud, for example.
Okay.
Since you know that's a possible host. I guess the last thing I would say is, you know, people, you know, have fun with your gardening, and plants die. Anybody who's come into my yard, I mean, most of the pictures of the plant diseases, I'm not joking when I say a lot of them come from my backyard.
Yes, yes. No, of course. And that's why we have compost heaps, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes my garden looks like a compost heap.
Yeah.
But,
we've run out of time, but we've been talking to two Purdue professors, Cliff Sadoff and Jana Beckerman, about the PurdueplantDoctor.com. Diagnostic tool. And I appreciate your taking the time today. I look forward to speaking to you again as the season heats up and we see what wants to drop dead over here next time. Thanks well a lot to both of you.
Such a pleasure. Thank you, Margaret.
Okay. Thank you, Margaret.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
Programming and underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, now offering 100% organic vegetable, flower, and herb seeds for that farm and garden. Available at highmowingseeds.com.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Now don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and sleuthing meantime.